Hey everybody, welcome to a special edition of Objection, the worldwide leader in contrarian a-holery. I am Dave Johnson, joined by Dan Mancini.
Hello there.
And what could possibly bring us out of our... where does the old white man cabal keep us, you know, and then bring us out with, like, the galley or something?
Yeah, some sort of safe house.
some Eastern Europe, some safe house in a former Eastern Bloc country, right? So, not unlike the place that Liam Neeson had to infiltrate and taken, you know, the Albanian stronghold. So that's where they keep.
Yes, it's my greatest fear that Liam Neeson will show up.
He'll show up
at our safe house.
I know. Until that time, we're here broadcasting for you, the people. And so, what could possibly what tears us away? Well, it's essentially, I don't know, the implosion, the self-immolation of one of, well, what had been one of my favorite TV shows. And Dan, I know you enjoyed it as well. And that show is Parks and Recreation. So
yes.
So we're here.
One of my favorite shows for two seasons in a row,
and sporting one of the all-time funniest seasons of half-hour television, which was its second, I thought. So it's taking a drastic turn for the befuddling, if you ask me. And I check around, but maybe we're alone in this. Maybe we truly are contrarian a-holes, because it doesn't seem like anyone else seems to think anything's wrong. But to me, it's just a glaring screw up. But let's get right to it, I guess. Let's just opening statements. Dan, what are we looking at with Parks and Rec?
Yeah, I thought the season opener was okay.
That's right. Yeah. This is where they go to Washington and
right. Characters are sort of separated and everything, but you know, it worked as the season opener, and then episode two, things went squirrely.
Yeah.
Really badly. And I think the formula, first of all, of having all of the characters separated, having Ben in Washington and April with him, and having Leslie off doing her thing, and then the rest of the Parks and Recreation people, is just it's messed with the writing big time, I think. And the dynamics. Character dynamics are terrible this season.
I mean, so it's – and they're just kind of like the decisions are kind of – they don't really make sense. I mean, why would April leave Andy and go to Washington to work in a stupid job with Ben when she's shown zero interest in that, you know?
Right, and it's a – April is really funny with Andy. She's not really funny with Ben.
Yes, that's
– and this is – like across the board through the entire show. And you know, we'll get into plot specifics of the second and third episode, but I think a lot of the plot problems are affected by these skewed character dynamics. Having everybody all off by themselves is, I don't know, it's insane.
So now I kind of contend that things started to get squirrely, to use your word, like with last season. I thought the whole whole season arc of Leslie running for office, maybe again on paper, you know, hey, fun with local politics and elections and whatever, and Paul Rudd will be the, you know, he'll be the her opponent, fun, but it started to really kind of show you where it was heading and how I just don't think that's just not the Leslie, the character of Leslie Knope doesn't fit into that realm well, I don't think, you know.
No, if they were going to go down that path, she needed to lose. And
right.
She needed especially to lose to Paul Rudd, because that character is such a moron.
And he stole,
it would have been really funny.
And he was funnier. Like, he was funnier than Leslie in his scenes, you know, and
right.
Arguably more likable. I remember that struck me as odd, because the writers kind of had set off on this, you used a term, I think, in a Facebook post, you know, the self-righteous crusade, right?
Right.
So they set her on this path, and they kind of boxed themselves into a corner. So, you know, Paul Rudd was goofy and an idiot, and she was so serious, but because of their interactions, would always, like, lead to her being unlikable, actually.
Yeah, because she was very confrontational with him, and then he didn't really care. He kind of liked her as a candidate.
Yeah.
And everything, and wasn't really that concerned about losing. And it would have been so much funnier if he had won.
Right.
Because he was such an idiot.
Right.
And it would have said something about democracy and, you know, I mean, it would have been one of the ways. I mean, it is a political show, but they've balanced things really well and made whatever political commentary they've made has sort of been in the background and and kind of witty and clever. And yeah. that would have been one where it's like, oh, you know, the idiot gets elected, of course. The guy with no substance whatsoever.
And it would have been consistent with what Pawnee, you know, what they right. set up this goofball town to be, you know.
But instead she wins and then they paint themselves into this corner.
That's right.
Now what do you do? Now she's not in Parks and Rec. We have a show called Parks and Recreation where the lead character is not part of the Parks and Recreation department.
Well,
what we're left with.
And what made Leslie Knope so funny, like to me, was so she's this typhoon of ambition and idealism, right, and utopian vision, but she's constrained by this low-level bureaucratic job. So that juxtaposition is always funny, you know? I mean,
right.
Like I think back to when she was trying to put – she had these grand ideas to put together the annual report, right, for the Parks and Rec, and she got all the former directors of the Parks and Rec together, and, you know, and then her vision just kind of buckled under itself, but that was hilarious because – there was these idiots juxtaposed with her vision. She kind of was, she got exasperated with it. And then you had Ron come in to act as a buffer who was still supported her, but, you know, took some shots at like bureaucracy and whatever. So it felt all balanced. But the funny parts were she, like her energy was contained by just what, you know, where she had occupied. And they came out with a nice annual report, but it was a, you know, it was a good payoff and it advanced the story between April and Andy too. So, like, I looked at that as a good example of why Leslie Knope is funny when she was number two in the Parks and Rec department.
Right, and the magic line that the show always walked or did in seasons two and three is we like her heart, we like her as a character. Most of her ideas are completely stupid.
Yes, right.
We like Ron. He's kind of crazy. You know
yes.
what I mean? And they're sort of the polar opposites. And so as an audience, we sit in the middle ground, liking both characters, but not totally identifying with them, or, you know, what they think, thinking both of them are hilarious, but also a little nuts.
Right.
Now it's no longer that. Now it's some outrageous scenario and we're supposed to think it's a genius idea by Leslie Knope. We're supposed to think that banning soft drinks over, you know, 16 ounces is a great idea.
See, no, it's worse than that, though, actually. And because it's – okay, so now we're into the meat of this, why this show has really kind of fell apart this season, you know.
Right.
And so they saw – like they really kind of eased – like the first episode I liked, you know, it kind of – you know, she had these huge ideas. She was constrained by Washington bureaucracy, you know, so that was – now that was kind of fun. In the second episode, she started to don her Crusader helmet, right, where she was trying to keep the pool open, right, a couple extra
right.
hours. But the hijinks that she had to go through weren't funny. Like, I mean, they maybe on paper or like on the writing room whiteboard, they were mm-hmm. funny. You know, her hair is half done, and there's an old guy who drops dead, and not you know, and there's a sleazy councilman who gets pushed in the pool or whatever. So that really. And I was like, okay, keeping the park, you know, that's a layup, I guess, right? Keep the pool open for the kids. So they kind of, there's her first crusade. But then, like you said, the second one, where she wasn't even trying to ban soda, but that would have been more honest, because that's what she wants to do, right?
Right.
So it's like, it's the cop out. It's the soda tax, which is a mm-hmm. real world kind of hot button political issue, and they play it straight, and then the opponents have no real counter to, you know, there's no one in the real world that resembles, you know, like these people with 80-ounce turbo chugs or something. So
right, exactly.
So if they were
trash
honest,
can
well,
size,
trash can size, right? And it's so over the top and outrageous that, I mean, is the juxtaposition even funny? So great, you know, Leslie is, you know, she's got this point of view and it's treated in one way. It's treated as, you know, totally legitimate, but. So it's I guess it's like straddling two dimensions, it seems. Like there's a wormhole in Pawnee, right, where there's a real world on one side and then any opposing viewpoint or whatever is happening in some kind of crazy never-never land.
Right, and then there's no Ron Swanson in there to act as
right.
ballast
yeah.
for the whole thing in terms of the way that the writing is structured. Because I can believe Leslie, not with a tax, but with a ban, you're right. I could believe her backing that, like
yeah.
in season two or season three, and then Ron going to outrageous lengths to make that look like a stupid idea.
Right.
And the two of them sort of butting heads. And then whatever the resolution is, they sort of back each other up at the end. You know, they come to some sort of, they don't necessarily agree on the issue, but personally, they somehow support each other. You know, would be the typical Parks and Rec formula. You know, so it's like, okay, well, they have differing viewpoints, but they respect one another. And, you know, and it resolves in some way, usually where typically Leslie looks like a buffoon.
Right.
Maybe Ron looks like a buffoon, depending on, you know, which way it goes. But one of them ends up looking like a buffoon over the thing.
And he has, like, a throwaway line in that episode. Like, oh, it's your, you know, quest for the nanny state, blah, blah, blah. But it's a throwaway line, you know? So it was – and you would think, remember when Chris offered Ron the assistant, you know, the assistant job, the assistant town director, town manager job?
Right.
You know, he turned it down. Well, on one hand, you got to – I guess you're called Parks and Rec, so you got to keep at least a few people in the department. But you could kind of see where that would be interesting, where he is in a higher level of power, right? And he's sparring maybe with
him. Yeah. Everything is just off. Now – like the first episode, that was the one where they did the employee barbecue, right? Or was that episode two?
Oh, I think so. I think it was. I think you're right.
Because even that, the way that Ron was all tightly wound about the barbecue and people respecting the barbecue is just not – I mean, yes, the man obviously is in favor of cooking meat with fire, but he would not be that crazy over – forcing people to behave a certain way, you know, and sort of mellow out and respect the burgers he's making and all that stuff. It was very much not Ron Swanson.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so let's, you know, moving on. So this, so you see, you saw that kind of general escalation. So then to me, it came to a head in this recent episode on Thursday where like, you can, so, again, pool being open, fine. You know, who's got a problem with that? Pretty non-contentious, right?
Mm-hmm.
Soda tax, yeah, you can see where there can be, you know, there could be legitimate opposing points of view, right? But now, like, they get, so then they up the ante to this abstinence-only education episode. So, and I know you just caught it, so I wanted to hear what your thought was.
Well, I mean, it was very much the same sort of thing as the soda tax, where, okay, it's abstinence-only education based on old people getting chlamydia, which is like, you know, the other sort of straw man.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of people drinking trash can-sized sodas. It makes no sense. I understand the absurdity, but all of the ridicule is pointed in the wrong direction. Again,
and I think it's even worse than that, because if they were honest, is abstinence-only education in the real world, where Anne, she does a little monologue, remember, talking about the stats, and Anne and Leslie and everyone who, you know, is that, so that's where they occupy, apparently. But in the real world, is it put in place to benefit geriatrics, you know?
Right.
No. So if it were, you know, could you, you know, if it was actually utilized the way, you know, supporters of abstinence-only education would have it utilized, it'd be for kids, right? Like middle school kids or high school kids. But you can't have Leslie Knope throwing condoms at middle schoolers, right? Because then so what you do, you talk about a straw man, you set up this juxtaposition with, you know, a sobering analysis of the situation of abstinence-only, and then you just pair it with something that would never happen. And in fact, you're worse than that because you're not even being honest with. And again, this is more about it not being funny than anything, you know?
Right.
It's just not funny.
Because you could do an episode about chlamydia spreading among the senior citizens of Pawnee that would be very funny.
It would be funny.
And,
right.
You know, we'll give a little hat tip here to Mitch Hadaway, former DVD Verdict writer. On Facebook, he made a very good point, which was how you have an episode that's about VD among the elderly and April is not in it.
Yeah, right.
In the vicinity of that is absolutely absurd.
Yes. Yeah.
He's right, because she would have been hilarious had she been in the proximity. Instead, she's in Washington with Ben doing nothing.
Literally doing nothing, I think. You know, and then just – the show just ended so painful, like, where, So everyone calls Leslie, congratulates her for her crusading self-righteousness, you know, and then she decides to pin her censure on her jacket, you know.
Right.
As, you know, as a badge of courage or whatever. So it's being, the writers want us to be rooting for her, right? And their position, all, you know, they're staking their claims in pretty obvious, like, political statements, but it's just, they're either not, I mean, if that just seems like that's the rules they want to play by, but they're not being fair to them, you know?
Right. And the censure thing was way, it was another thing that was way outside of Leslie's character. Because we know from three seasons of her that just breaking
right.
government rule
yes.
because she thinks it's the right thing is not a Leslie Knope
that's true.
Pattern of behavior. The rule is there. She follows it, period. The idea that she's going to be censured because, well, she's going to dole out condoms even though the law says she can't do it. She just wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just – like even the – even Perv Hapleyan is perverts, you know, which could be sort of funny, but I was just so kind of like, I guess it just dawned on me that this is the new reality for Parks and Recreation, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think that just depressed me to no end. So, I don't know. I mean, what's coming next? That's my question, you know?
What other hot topics are we,
you know, is Leslie going to get into some embryonic stem cell research debate?
Yeah, I hope we get into some Benghazi stuff.
Yeah, Benghazi. Awesome. Are we going to cover the Benghazi? So, okay, that's our gripe session. So what do you think some suggestions, what could they do, you think, to salvage it? And this is only between us because apparently everyone – I remember reading – I've read comments on the show and people say, oh, it's one of my top five favorite episodes of all time. I can only think that it's just because they may sympathize with whatever political position Leslie might be.
Yeah, I don't get it. And to be clear, if this was – you know, I don't agree with the politics of, well, the abstinence-only thing is a separate thing. Banning big soft drinks
is
absurd to me. But even still, if it was all stuff that I totally agreed with, that's not funny.
It isn't.
Political hectoring is not funny, even if you agree with it.
If Anne stood up on a podium and talked about how we should repeal the death tax, you know, or at least reduce it. And I said, oh, preach it. Do you think that still doesn't make it funny at all? You know,
no.
I mean, that's no. So.
And in her non sequitur cowboy shirt.
In her non sequitur cowboy shirt, right. Well, that's the other thing. So even these non political side stories are going nowhere.
Right.
You know, again, the Tom and Ron thing that I can't even remember how they got resolved, to tell you the truth. You know, just. Not even at the very least, they broke up Tom and Anne. That was good because that made zero sense last year.
Yeah.
But now they're essentially have two separate stories that they don't know what to do with. So.
Yeah. So a couple things they can do. Number one, they have to get April back to Pawnee.
Yes.
We need some Jean Ralphio in here very quickly.
Jean Ralphio's on his own show. He's got his own show on Showtime.
I know. Well, they got to, you know.
They do something. They mentioned him.
Spend the money.
They name dropped him last episode. Yeah,
it's not good enough.
Yeah, we need John Ralphio back. Maybe the ghost of Lil Sebastian should return somehow.
Yeah, that would work. Now I will say, you know, I might like an episode or two more of this would probably be the end for me.
I think
except that I have heard that Christy Brinkley is playing Jerry's wife.
That's not bad.
So I have to at least see that and Tom's
reaction, right? I mean, but they got to do something with Ron, right? They got to do something with Ron more, don't you think?
Yes.
I mean, not necessarily the Ron Swanson show, but I think, I mean, again, he was a guy who was very funny when he's juxtaposed with, you know, Leslie, or he's...
Right, I think he's, you know, you take Leslie out of the equation, and he's just not as funny on his own. And, right, the stuff that he says is too direct. It's too much, you know, making the point sort of... hitting it on the head instead of doing something ridiculous or, you know, making some wry comment. So, yeah, they need to get those two back together too, Leslie and Ron.
Yeah.
Because neither one of them is working as a character on their own.
Boy, I'm just trying to think of, like, what kind of different show it would have been if she had lost the election, you know?
Yeah, it could be. So much better because even, you know, this whole thing of, I mean, the plot line with Tom having to give up screens because a judge told him to, which is borderline the Seinfeld, you know, guy.
Yeah, Butler, right?
Butler. I mean, it's getting into that ridiculous realm. But, I mean, that could still be somewhat funny, except the interaction between Ron and Tom was not funny at all.
I liked your suggestions. I'm trying to think of – I'm just trying to look back at what had worked in the past.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they have nothing for Tom to do right now.
Yeah, right. I mean, but again, so I look at season two, which to me was the high point, and it's just such great, you know, episode after episode, just great episodes. And so why, you know, why did those work? Or, you know, episode three, like, you know, another one of my favorites, another good example of why kind of Leslie's crazy ambition limited to just the Parks and Rec worked was, you know, when Jerry got mugged, you know, quote unquote mugged, remember? Mm-hmm. And Andy Samberg guest starred as the hard of hearing park ranger, you know, just very funny. Of course, you know, Jerry's funny. Tom was funny in that because he's funny when he plays, like when he gets victimized, you know.
Yes,
he's so suave, and then he gets victimized is when he's funny. So when he's got to run down the court, you know, run with the cart rather than the golf cart, you know. And then, yeah, so, and as Leslie's kind of on patrol to figure out what's going on, and there's half-wits that she has to deal with, and she has to go, you know, Joan Calamezzo, she has to go on her show and embarrass herself there.
Right.
And she finds, you know, she does find, and she finds a workaround, you know, and it, you know, and it pays off, and it's a good story, and she got her, you know, she did something good, and she worked around it, and, but it was kind of within this confines of the world of the Parks and Recreation Department, which is a lot more interesting than the town council or
I think that is the key. She's got to get removed from office somehow.
Yeah.
And sent back to the Parks and Rec, because it is much more interesting watching her deal with a hole in Anne's backyard.
Yes, yeah.
Than it is, you know, some major topic. And the charm of that is the hole in your backyard affects you more, you know, all of her sort of pluck and everything in these little tiny local issues really have more of an effect on people's lives than all this, you know, soda stuff, which is the charm of the show, or was the charm of the show for a couple seasons there. And now that's gone because she's, you know, dealing with big legislative
initiatives and stuff. And she was a charming character because she helps people personally. Too.
Right.
You know, she did things on a personal level. She helped, you know, she helped.
She went out and fell in that hole.
Yeah, she fell in the hole. Or she went out and she put together the Harvest Festival or the Little Sebastian stuff. And, you know, or she helped the cops with stuff. So she went out there and she helped hunt down whatever the ferret or whatever it is in the golf course, you know. And so, I mean, she was kind of doing that stuff personally. That was, you know, so – I don't know, maybe it's just kind of like anti swept up in bureaucracy. Leslie is more charming and funny, you know.
She's really charming, like when she's idolizing Hillary Clinton and Geraldine Ferraro and, you know, all these women politicians. She's less and less charming the more she becomes like them.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know.
And I think that,
like,
we want this
little podunk small town Parks and Recreation person
dealing with the pushy public access TV show personalities, and just like being forced to deal with these crazy crop of characters, you know, just to get her little bits of community impact done.
Right.
And so now instead she's still kind of dealing with weirdo city council members, but that's about it. Because who else is above her, you know? So, I don't know, it's not as – so then that's when then you got the straw men. And then you got, like, these, I don't know, you know, all these fake, oh, we're going to fire, you know, sweet himself to fire so-and-so if you do this, right? Oh, we stood up to the man, and they are just bluffing. So, I don't know. If there were – I guess it's just they – putting – she is a character that succeeds because of the arena she's put in, you know, more than anything else.
Right. She's in a bad, bad arena right now.
She is. All right. So you're saying two episodes? You're going to give it to
Christy
or the Christy Brinkley will be the cutoff?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm going to go, if it's two episodes like it's been, then I think I'm done.
I mean, I literally
but
said
I'll sort
to
of keep my ear to the wall about the Christie Brinkley thing and check back in when those episodes pop up. But
I mean, I literally said to my wife, like, I can't, I don't know if I can watch any more of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
and it's just an odd, it's just a, like, overall it's an odd choice because I could see how, you know, maybe people would, you know, get turned off by the pretty straight, you know, it's very political now. Like you said, the politics were kind of in the back. Like you said, it was a political show, but it was more about the mechanics of the politics.
Right.
The mechanics of a small town government. Where now it's pretty straight, like, you know, 50-50 political. So whereas, you know, a good portion of the populace may not agree with, you know, what you're talking about. So it just seems like an odd choice for the writers to make. And it was, I think it must be conscious because, you know, I'm a fan of the Parks and Rec page on Facebook, and before the Biden Ryan debates, it was just they did a stream of pro Biden posts on Parks and Recreation, which I found odd. So.
Yeah. Oh, I missed that because I've got that page too.
There's like multiple ones, so I don't. Yeah. Very. Maybe they're just going all in, so that's possible as well. But at least make me laugh, I suppose. Just make it funny. That's all I ask.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I just don't. Politics in a show like that it's just not interesting to me.
It isn't, right.
It's sort of like, you know, I was talking with a friend about Newsroom, whatever, the Aaron Sorkin thing,
yeah.
You know, and being questioned, well, do you not like it because it's, you know, too liberal for you? And it's like, well, that's not the point is, I wouldn't like it if it was really conservative and it was just about looking back at media stories and pointing out what the media should have done.
Yeah.
Like, well, yeah, it's real obvious now how they should cover a story. But, you know, that's just way too sanctimonious.
Yeah.
It's TV. You know, let me explain how the media should have covered this story. It's like, well, it was a little muddier when it was actually happening, you know, for journalists at the time.
Yeah.
It's not lack of smarts on their part. It's, you know, everything's easier when you're looking back at it 2 years later.
And to be honest, I mean, why is it, you know, I watch Parks and Rec for the escapism. You know, I don't want to deal with this cycle, the 24/7 political cycle, but it kind of dragged. I mean, I don't even care if Jean Raphael came back in proclaiming the worthiness of boosting the dividends tax rates on millionaires. Fine, do it. But you're Jean Raphael and just be funny. Is that, you know, I don't care what you say.
Right.
John Raphael is funny, and what's happening is not. You know, bring Detlef Schrempf back. You know,
yeah.
Maybe he could run against Leslie. Who knows?
Do a show about a soda tax or soda ban or whatever. But you know, get the characters together in a way where it can actually be funny.
Yeah.
Get Ron and Leslie in the same room.
Yes.
Butting heads over it in a way that would be funny. But just having Leslie, you know, self-righteously tilt at windmills, basically, you know, non-issues.
Right.
What's next? Stem cell research.
That's right. It's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming. Whatever the big, yeah.
Roe v. Wade.
Roe v. Wade. Yeah, they'll tackle that. Absolutely. Expanding the electoral college, perhaps, you know. Yeah, we got 20 odd episodes left to discover that. Or two. Maybe it's two. I don't know. So, okay. Well, maybe we might be the only people who have issues with this. So, If it is, so be it. We are the worldwide leaders in contrarian a-holery. So
I just find that hard to understand, though, because it's just not funny.
I don't know.
It's not the politics of it. It's just not funny this season.
So the idea
that people are watching this and thinking, man, that's hilarious, I just don't get it.
Maybe it's not that. Maybe, you know, I don't know. I am bewildered.
Yes, I certainly, you know,
same way
I do not remove the possibility that I'm a moron.
That's possible as well.
Like, I don't
get why people like the Big Bang Theory either, so what do I know?
No, I don't understand that at all.
So, or that NCIS is the country's number one show.
Yeah, and how many, are there multiple NCISs?
Yeah, there's
Is there just one?
And I think there's one in L.A. with LL Cool J.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Bring LL Cool J to Parks and Rec. He'd be funny. I'll take anything at this point.
Jean Raphael, LL Cool J.
Because all I know is the slate of half-hour sitcoms that don't make me want to slam my head into this metal futon here next to me is perilously thin.
I mean,
The Office completely falling apart.
Yeah, The Office is horrible.
Unbearable.
I'm filled with dread and foreboding about the return of Community.
And that's the next, if it returns. Maybe it'll be
based on our track record so far this season,
Yeah, it's going to be rough. This kind of stuff will drive me to Whitney, you know? So that's all right. Okay, well, there you go. Parks and Rec sucks. Hopefully it'll find its footing, but I don't know. The trends, we're talking about polls and trends these days, and the trends do not look favorable.
Yeah, Gallup needs to weigh in on this. This is important.
Yeah, Gallup on this. Yeah,
like, what are the chances here
of
seeing a turnaround?
Oh, man. I don't know. All this talk makes me want to go to the good old days and watch the MRI episode with Leslie and Will Arnett. That was a good one.
Yes.
Or the dinner party episode. Another hilarious one of my favorites.
Tammy.
Yeah. Tammy. Tammy and Ron. Yeah. So many good times. But unfortunately, as John Ralphio says these days, Park Track will make my eyes piss tears. All right.
John Ralphio.
Well, I guess it's back to the bunker for us.
Yes, back to the safe house.
Back to the
Hopefully
safe house.
Liam Neeson doesn't show up looking for his daughter.
I think half an hour is the tops. I think he's got a trace on us. So, but before we do, you got to leave our audience with something.
Yes, thanks. 10 points easy.
Objection!